And now it's time for shopping news with Arthur Price.
Hello. Hello, housewives, again. Well, there are plenty of bargains for your larder in the shops at the moment. Runner beans, onions and potatoes are all good value for money. And now's the time to buy gooseberries. But if you think you're buying a Centurion tank, well, leave it for a week or two. The ones in the shops haven't reached their best yet. They're a bit small and flavourless. Oh, and if you're thinking of preserving some surgical corsets for next Christmas, why not put down a bottle of Chateau Neuf de Saint-Germain Mandelieu's wart remover? They go together like peaches and creosote. One last bargain you can find in the shops this week, and that's me. 3 and 6 a pound, ready wrapped, and best served with egg all over my face.
Also in the shops this week in ripe condition, well, going off a bit, perhaps, are Timbrook Taylor, John Cleese, Graham Garden, David Hatch, Joe Kendall Bilotti, with their well-known package deal.
There's a giveaway of Bilotti in every package.
I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Shoppers, again!
I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Rip off. And this week, we report on housing.
Oh, no! Not that! Oh, not that! I beg of you, for pity's sake, not that!
Why? What's the matter with housing?
Housing? Sorry, I thought you said community alligator wrestling in Tottenham. Housing, that's all right, sorry.
Yes, we report on housing.
Here in the heart of Batterwick, one of London's worst slum areas, lives 97-year-old Miss Edith Mimbles. She lived all her life in this tumble-down old house, which is in a shocking state of repair. Let's ask her what she feels about living in a rickety old place like this. I'll just knock out the door. I'm so sorry, I wanted number 3.
But there are other problems. In some parts of the country, the local inhabitants complain about the number of Indians moving into the area.
Hold you, stranger, look out! Here they come again!
Ugh, white man, take our land, steal our bungalows.
In these areas, overcrowding is a problem, but we heard of one family living alone in a house big enough to house many more occupants. We went to speak to the head of this family, but unfortunately, Her Majesty was away at the time. However, a palace spokesman did in fact tell us to push off.
Well, what can be done to improve living conditions? Does the fault really lie with the landlord?
Be
gone, I said, be gone this minute. Quit these portals in Stanton. Go.
Oh, how can you do this? What a cold, cold heart it is that turns out a poor woman with her fatherless babe, her aged white-haired mother, her ancient granny with a wooden leg.
Look at the houses themselves. How are they built?
Well, the simplest form of building is probably the Eskimo igloo, just a dome made out of blocks of ice. Unfortunately, the Eskimo igloo builders are dying out.
Why is that?
They never marry.
Oh, is that a tradition?
No, it's just that they've got terribly cold hands.
And even today, some people like to build their own homes. Do-it-yourself enthusiasts, like Mr. E.C. Duzzett of Clapham. I visited Mr. Duzzett, and when I reached the house he built all by himself, I rang the bell. Mr. does it open the fireplace, and I step into the bathroom.
Oh, hello, you've come to view my little boat, have you? Well, what do you think of it?
It's very nice. But this bathroom, isn't it rather small?
Yes, that was a slight miscalculation, yes, that the bath only fits in on one end, you see. So you have to take a bath standing up.
But doesn't all the water run out?
No, not if you keep the door shut.
And you built it all yourself?
Yes, I did it single-handed, yes. After the accident with the circular saw.
Now, this room here must be the sitting room.
Of course, yes. The ceiling's too low for you to stand.
Where we're in now, this is really unusual.
Yes, well, I'm very proud of this room. I designed it myself.
It's very plain and simple. No fireplace.
No, and no windows.
And no doors.
No, just black walls.
With no way in or out.
That's absolutely cool. Oh.
Most of us, however, prefer to leave the job to the professional builders.
All right, all that lads. Is everybody here?
They're all
now. There's Hannigan, Manigan, Tannigan, Dannigan, Brannigan, Fannigan, Paddy Muldoon.
It's Mickey O'Rafferty, Cafferty, Dafferty, Peter O'Toole, and Baldoni can too.
Right, we're going to get this house built. Now, me and Paddy will tell you what to do.
Right, now then, Bicarra. Muldoon, you start at the foundations with it.
Oh, it's start on the foundation, is it?
Sure it is. Don't always start at the foundation.
But why don't we start on the roof? Then we can keep out the rain when we're building the walls.
I got a better idea now. Why don't we build the house inside out? Then when it's raining outside, we're inside outside. And when it's fine outside, we're outside inside.
That's enough out of you, Solly Cohen. Now, you can carry the bricks up the ladder.
Right. Sure, and wouldn't it be easier for the poor fella if you built the house at ground level so all the bricks in it were cemented together and then he'd only have to make the one trip up that ladder? And that way we'd need one less man.
Good thinking, O'Rourke. You're fired.
Now then, lads, here's what you're going to do. Now, Michael O'Mulligan mixes the mortar while Big Billy Brannigan builds up the bricks.
And Paddy O'Poverty puts in the plumbing which Phineas Fogarty helps him to fix.
There's Mickey O'Maggany making the measurements. Mickey O'Lalligan knocking the nails.
Well, Kevin O'Callaghan carries the conkers and Dickie O'Donovan's doing the thing. Right, lads, keep it.
So much for the Italians. But in the old days, they really did build houses to last and to look good. And even today, you can still find the old-timers who remember life in the gracious homes of yesteryear.
Long-haired fellas.
Long-haired type.
Long-haired individual.
Don't have a proper home background.
That's the trouble.
Long-haired fellas.
And women.
Long-haired women. Even more.
I had to sell giblets last week.
Giblets?
Yes. Old ancestral home. Giblets. In the valley for years. Great-grandfather added the east wing.
Yes.
And the grandfather added the west wing. And then...
What happened then?
Flew away.
No.
In the last war, our roof flew off.
In the first war, my leg flew off. Most embarrassing. At a regimental dinner, just below the knee, clean as a whistle.
What happened?
No idea. I wasn't there at the time. Luckily. You know, my family lived in our house for over 300 years.
Really?
Yes, can't get rid of them. Them. I had to do some extra building on the roof.
Oh, yes?
Yes, but that's another story. Yes.
Story!
In my young days, we lived in a 15-bedroom house.
15?
15 bedrooms. Nothing else. Spend the whole day asleep. Didn't wake up till I was 21. If then.
Butler!
Speaking of butlers, our butler was always stealing our food.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know what we did?
Oh, no.
We set a man trap in the pantry.
Man trap in the pantry.
And we baited it with a gigantic Wensleydale cheese.
And what happened?
Caught an enormous mouse.
Ah. I remember those mice, fine creatures.
Not like these modern, long-haired mice. Well, I must be running along.
How do you know?
I can feel my legs moving.
And now it's time for a song. I'm sorry, it's proud to present their own unique entry for the Eurovision Song Contest. As always on the ball, the song is specially constructed to appeal to every member of the international judging panel. This could get us into the common market.
Now I've been all around the world, if you know what I mean. I have conquered Asia and Australia, and Antarctica, I've seen. I've done America and China, and yet, all that apart, there's a little place near Russia that is closest to my heart. Carry me back to Europe. That's where I long to be. Just show me the vineyards of Iceland and the windmills of Harry. Harry, the Dirty Hamburg and Guten Oven. Compadres are all that I need. Nick the Norwegian and Zorba the Swede. Carry me back to Europe, 'cause that's my home. Just show me the sights of Europe. Play me a Viennese fling. The Emerald Isle of Mallorca, a piece of the icing. Give me a Welsh senorita or a Colleen from Stockholm. The land of my fathers is calling to me. Hey, Adelaide, Adelaide, hey, Adelaide, Adelaide. I can see us now, skiing down the Autobahn in our gondola. Yawning to the sweet skirl of the Alpenhorns. Ah, how I love Italian opera. Sipping our tankards of Beaujolais and nibbling our Danish pastries. And remember, we stopped at that little bistro by the Bosphorus and ate a wonderful meal of spaghetti, sausages, frog's legs, haggis, Yorkshire pudding, and yogurt. And as the northern light sank over the Costa del Sol, I said, I loved you in Esperanto. All together now, I'm going back to Europe, where the Concord is leaving today. Back to the ladies of Europe, Bella Bella, ooh-la-la. Arrivederci, leben Sie wohl, farewell, go the dark, the box we, antio, patriciende, droppen Sie dead. Oh, carry me back to Europe, 'cause that's my
home. Is a police message. This morning, two masked men broke into an East Croydon jeweler's and got away with £10,000 worth of diamonds. Eyewitness reports describe one raider as being 6 feet 11 inches tall and the other 4 feet 9. Police are searching high and low.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is serial time once again. We present episode 10, only 3 to go, of Professor Prune and the Electric Time Trousers. stolen by the wicked fetish, arch-villain of outer space. Yet in a pair of makeshift trousers, the professor has managed to fly to Victorian England, where he is indicted for high treason. In the courtroom, he is faced with a prosecution counsel, who turns out to be none other than the evil fetish himself. What chance is he now? We shall soon know as we listen to this episode of...
The Time Trousers.
Oh, good grief. Fetish. Yeah, yeah.
The same. Oh, very similar.
And you are the counsel for the prosecution, are you?
I am, Miller.
Yeah, proceed with the cross-examination, would you?
You are Professor Proulx.
I am.
You are the inventor of...
We may as well point out at this stage that Graham Garden is playing both these parts. The following passage is not so much an exercise in humor as in vocal expertise. We do not expect many laughs during it, but Mr. Garden would appreciate a round of applause when it's all over. As this will persuade listeners at home that it was very difficult to do, which it isn't. Carry on, big head.
Professor, you are the inventor of these alleged time trousers.
I am.
I put it to you that these trousers are fakes.
I object.
Overruled. I put it to you that you are lying.
You're putting words into my mouth, sir.
I put it to you that when you tell me you are telling the truth, you are in fact lying in order not to tell the truth.
I am.
What?
Not.
Not what?
Lying.
What about? Ha-ha! You hesitate. Ha-ha-ha! Oh, the case rests, my lad.
Then the jury retired, but they soon found another one. And after several hours in consultation, they were ready to give their verdict.
You speak for the jury?
I do, my lad.
How did you find the defendant?
By looking under the table.
And tell me, do you find him guilty or innocent?
Guiltocent or indeed in a guilt.
Oh.
Six for and six against.
Oh, dear. I have to decide myself. Let's see. Did I find him guilty?
Oh!
Guilty.
Oh,
yes. Give me the black cap. It's getting very cold in here. Professor, you have been tried, and you must take the wrap. Put it round you, that'll keep you warm. There you are. Now, you've been tried, and it has been shown that many scandals have been caused by your trousers. These are serious breaches of the law. Silence in court. You've been found guilty of high treason, and you must be castigated.
Oh, no! What's that?
Now you shall be taken from this place to Tyburn Tree, where you will be hanged by the neck until ripe. Tickets on sale for me, price 3 and 6, 7 and 6. Edited highlights on BBC Two. Roll up!
So in the grim hush of early dawn, Professor Proulx was led out onto Tyburn Hill, where he beheld the terrible scaffold.
I am the executioner, and I have here a signed paper authorizing me to do this hanging.
True, a lynching voucher.
Have you no respect? Professor, before you go, would you like a cigarette?
Oh, thank you.
Now, do you have one last request?
Yes. Can I have a light? As the dawn approached, the rope was placed around the professor's neck, and the BBC broadcast the events to the nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the 6 o'clock news.
As the executioner slowly raised the lever that controlled the gibbet, Trixie, the professor's little niece, tried to stop him, crying,
I want to do it.
But even as the rope tightened, a galloping masked figure raced into view. Straight up the gallows it bounded. The professor was swept into the saddle. Trixie and Percy leapt on behind. Away they all fled, leaving the executioner aghast.
Thank you, just what I wanted, a lovely cast.
Oh, we're safe, Uncle, we're safe.
And who is our mysterious masked rescuer that gallops like the wind? Take your mask off and show us your true identity.
What?
Oh, no!
Yes, it was Spot. Yes, it was Spot, their faithful dog, whom they thought they'd lost forever.
Oh, you can't win, can you?
Well, Uncle, now we're all together again. Can't we go home in the flying trousers?
No, Trixie, you're forgetting. Fetish stole the original time trousers, so only he knows where they are.
Then we must find find him and he'll lead us to them.
And as luck would have it, at that very moment...
Look! Look! Up there in the sky! It's a huge balloon! Either that or a very fat wingless bird.
Yes. It was, of course, Fetish. In his own rocket-powered inflatable blue tit. And as he floated away into the west, he sang a song which told them exactly where he was going.
I'm off to Alabama, where the band run me.
And so they knew that Fetish really was bound for the deep south of America. Without delay, they clambered into a rowing boat and crossed the Atlantic in a record 16 years. A time that was not to be equal till the maiden voyage of the QE2. Oh. And then they took the railroad south and very soon found themselves at Rheumatic Creek, Virginia, boarding the riverboat that would take them down the Mississippi to New Orleans. There were all manner of folk on board, gathered around a man who was haranguing them.
Come on, gather around, y'all. You better listen good, because I'm going to tell you. I done found the secret of eternal happiness. Now shout hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, super.
I have here in my hand this, friends, this is Dr. Duck's elixir.
Dr. Duck? Obviously a quack.
Yes. And for the engines here present, we got fire water.
Fire water. Is that whiskey, Duck?
Nope, running nose. This is petrol.
But petrol, not for drinking.
Now, you won't be doing your book learning, son, because if you did, you'd know that engines run on petrol. And besides, you drink this fire water, you know what you're going to be. You're going to be a fire engine.
Oh, cool, what a bright child.
But this man is cheating these people. Stop him, Uncle.
Yes. Hey, you, Dr. Chappie, I'm a man of science, and I think your elixir is a fake. I demand to test it. Now, to do a proper analysis, I shall need, 30 or 40 bottles, half a dozen tonics, and a packet of nuts.
Help yourself, y'all. And so the doctor tested the so-called elixir, and after 3 hours' vigorous experiments, came to this conclusion.
I can't tell. I shall need another 50 bottles.
Professor,
I'm afraid I am.
My good sir, from the way that you're skipping and leaping about, I'd say you were a gambling man. How would you care to join us in a game of cards?
Splendid little idea.
Right, well, allow me to introduce a few friends of mine. Now, first, this is the hostess of the ship. She is Cindy Lou.
Gentlemen.
And this here, friends, my sporting friends, two regular Mississippi gamblers. I can meet them.
Fat Chance?
Sam Hoops.
You kind of join us at the table?
What are you playing?
This is a crap game.
Yep, it is pretty bad.
Uncle! Uncle, look at Fat Chance. Do you see what he's wearing?
A hat.
No, on his legs.
Funny place for a hat.
Oh! Good grief! The electric time trousers themselves! We must get them off him.
And there's only one way to do that.
Gentlemen, I suggest a game of strip poker.
Very well. Deal the cards. Now, place your bets.
I bet a sock.
I double that. A pair of socks and a vest.
I'll raise your vest and see your corset.
I'll lay a hat.
All right. All right, Professor. I'm going to call your hand. Hand?
Yes.
Come here. What you got?
Four aces. Too bad. I got five.
Oh, now what do I do?
Quickly, Professor. Play the queen.
All right. Now. Trixie, once he's standing, grab his trousers.
What? No, quick, Fat, over the side. No!
After them, Trixie. No! After them.
The professor and Trixie leapt into the murky waters of the Mississippi. Alas, they soon lost Fat Chance and Sam Hopes. And as dawn came, they found themselves washed up on a sandbank in the middle of the Mississippi swamps. Around them, the marsh gas bubbled as alligators slithered through the slime.
Oh, it's all gas and gators.
Then they saw coming towards them a shambling, bumbly figure.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity.
Who are you?
Ah, Uncle Rhesus.
Rhesus is a little monkey.
A little monkey? Well, he's a bit of a rascal.
Look here, sunshine.
Yes.
Can you done gone bin direct us to decivilization, honey child?
Sure can, man. I can take you to the big white house on the hill, and you can meet my mistress, sweet Savannah Sue.
After a few minutes, the professor felt dizzy.
You try singing this high.
Soon they approached the big white house.
Around it was a splendid orchard with orange trees groaning with fruit.
Oh, get off, Philip.
A gardener was laying out plants.
Take that plant.
And there was a magnificent swimming pool with a lone bather shaped like a piano.
Sweet Savannah Sue.
Like you said, I'm shaped like a piano. Would you care to tickle my ivories? I'm just having a quick dip. Come on in.
Oh, I can't swim. But perhaps if I could use your water wings.
They're not water wings.
Oh, I wonder if you can help us.
Oh, yes.
We're trying to get some trousers off a Mississippi gambler.
Very difficult. I've tried off my own.
No, ma'am, you misconstrue.
Oh, do I?
Yes. These are the electric time trousers, and they're really mine.
Oh, very interesting. You must tell me more. I'll just get out of the water. Reese.
Yes, ma'am.
Give me a hand. Thank you. Now, I'm sure you could all do with a drink.
Oh, yes, I'd love something long and cool.
And I'll have something short and cheeky. Reese, bring us an iced carrot and Jimmy Clitheroe. Now, tell me your problems, dear boy.
But no sooner had the professor opened his mouth than Rhesus came rushing out.
Oh, what were you doing in my mouth?
Mr. Chew, the engines is rising. Listen. The engines is revolting.
None of that, Rhesus, you little Enoch Powell, you.
Well, Mr. Sue, you folks gotta hide. It's that running nose. He's attacking everyone.
But didn't he sign a piss traitor this morning?
Sure did. Oh. But then they all drank a toast in that Dr. Duck's fire water. He lit a peace pipe and blew up. He sure is mad. He says he's gonna scalp every white folk in town.
You'll never scalp me. I'm completely bald.
But I'm not. Quick, Trixie, stop. Hide.
Come and
help.
What will happen to the professor now? Has Spot reappeared only to be scalped all over?
With luck.
Will they find the time trousers in time to return to 1969 by episode 13? Listen again to next week's installment of...
The Time Trousers. Bye!
Those are the voices of Tim Brooke Taylor, John Cleese, Graham Garden, David Hatch, Joe Kendall, Bilotti, bringing you a script written by Graham Garden and Bilotti. The song was Bilotti's Two, and Leon Cohen arranged it, along with the rest of the music, which was played by Dave Lee and the boys. David Hatch and Peter Titheridge produced it, and tore each other's hair in the process. To tell you why, here is John Otto Cleese.
That was, I'm sorry, I'll read it again, Mother, again.
My name is Angus Brill. I know I would be, since you were sorry, I'll read that again.